I think for most of us, when we think of Sherlock Holmes, we think of the short stories of which Conan Doyle finally wrote, often much against his will, 54. And we think of stories like The Speckled Band, The Adventure of the Speckled Band, and The Adventure of Silver Blaze, both of which are absolute masterpieces of short story writing. But it's interesting that the creation of Sherlock Holmes came about because Conan Doyle wanted to write a novel. And he was a doctor by profession, a young man trying to make his way in the profession down at Southsea, where he had a practice. And he wasn't doing very well. He didn't get many patients, and so had a lot of spare time on his hands. And he would sit down and try to concoct a novel. He'd always been a storyteller, a teller of tales, as somebody once described him. In his very first medical job as a surgeon on board of a whaling ship, he used to entertain the hard-bitten whalers with stories that he invented, and this was a sort of trial period for him to see whether he could actually write, which was his dearest wish. So sitting in his study at Southsea, waiting for patients who never came, Conan Doyle began to evolve a detective story. And of course he needed to have a main character, a detective, who would lead the investigation. So he invented this character, who he first of all called Sherinford Holmes. Sherinford Holmes, he mused, and eventually changed it, of course, to Sherlock Holmes, which is now a household name. Sherlock Holmes is, of course, the combination of a rather exotic Christian name, Sherlock, with a very commonplace down-to-earth surname, Holmes. And in that we have the essence of the character of Sherlock Holmes, somebody who, on the one hand, has his feet very firmly on the ground, looking at the facts and deducing from the facts, but then has this flash of eccentricity and even genius in his makeup as well. Now, a detective needs a sidekick or somebody who's going to be there to observe what he is doing and to ask the pertinent questions that, of course, the reader wants to know. So he invented a doctor, whom, again, he gave a rather exotic name to originally. He was called Ormond Sacker. But I think Dr. Ormond Sacker rather competed with Mr. Sherlock Holmes in the names area, so he was simplified by Conan Doyle, who happened to know another fellow doctor in Southsea called Dr. John Watson. So he borrowed his friend's name, and Dr. John Watson became, of course, one of the most famous fictitious doctors ever to exist. And so he had the two main protagonists of his novel. And the novel that he wrote in 1886 was originally called The Tangled Skein, but again, the title gestated into A Study in Scarlet. And it does seem, of course, amazing to us now, all these years later, to think that Conan Doyle actually had a great deal of difficulty selling this novel. Nobody wanted it. He tried several publishers who sent it back, and finally he got an offer from Ward Lock & Co., who were only willing to offer him £25 for the entire copyright of this story. Well, he was a young writer, he was keen, he wanted to get started, and so he accepted with great reluctance this offer. And as he said cynically in his autobiography years later, "I never at any time received another penny for it." The novel actually was hardly noticed when it was published, because it was actually published in Beaton's Christmas Annual of 1887, sandwiched between lots of stories about Christmas and seasonal articles and advertisements. So it was got rather lost, really. And it's an interesting debut, because Sherlock Holmes appears. There's the famous meeting between Sherlock Holmes and Watson, and they're setting up home together in 221B Baker Street. And there is a murder, which Holmes begins to investigate. But then the whole novel is a flashback to what happened prior to the murder in America. And nearly two-thirds of the novel is about the Mormons. A strange way, perhaps, to introduce Sherlock Holmes, to introduce him and then abandon him. So that may account for why this novel has never been one of the great successes. Years later, the last of the four novels on Sherlock Holmes, The Valley of Fear, Conan Doyle used the same device. Again, Sherlock Holmes is investigating a murder, and once again, Conan Doyle takes us back in time to America again to tell the story of the Scourers, who were a sort of unofficial trade union in the American coal fields in Pennsylvania in the 1870s. They were mostly Irish immigrants who worked in these coal fields, and they were known as the Molly Maguires. This is all true, by the way. This isn't a fantasy on Conan Doyle's parts. This is actual fact. And one of the things that Conan Doyle loved to do in his other novels, his non-Sherlock Holmes novels, was to recreate historical fact as fiction. And in The Valley of Fear, he manages to do both. A combination of fact and fiction that tells us about the brutal lifestyle in the coalfields of Pennsylvania. As I say, once again, in The Valley of Fear, Sherlock Holmes disappears for a great deal of the novel. And again, this is probably why this is not considered to be one of the greatest of the Sherlock Holmes stories. Nevertheless, I have to say, I think it's a very gripping story. And in it, Conan Doyle pays tribute to the great American popular fiction of his day, writers like Bret Hart, the Western, and indeed gangster stories that were evolving at the end of the 19th century. He pays tribute to these. He loved anything American, actually. And that's interesting because it was through an American that he came to write the second of the novels, The Sign of Four. Mr. Joseph Marshall Stoddart from Philadelphia was the editor of Lippincott's Monthly Magazine, and he came across to England to look for aspiring young English writers and offered Doyle £100 to write a short novel that he would then serialise in his magazine. The terms were obviously much better than the ones he'd received for Study in Scarlet, and so Doyle accepted at once. Interestingly, the other person who was present at the meeting, dinner was given by this editor of Lippincott's for aspiring young English writers. The other aspiring young English writer was a man called Oscar Wilde. The thought of Oscar Wilde and Conan Doyle having dinner together is an interesting poser. However, Doyle did write that he was quite impressed with the conversation of Oscar Wilde, and Wilde's character was assumed by the character of Thaddeus Sholto in The Sign of Four. A thinly veiled caricature, really, of the figurehead of aestheticism. He speaks a bit like Oscar Wilde. Sholto describes his sanctum as an oasis of art in the howling desert of South London. And so on. The Sign of Four is a terrific story, again, using historical fact. It has a large basis in the Indian Mutiny of 1857 and the discovery and the acquisition of gold and jewels that belonged to a Maharaja in India and were stolen by British soldiers. This is the basis of the story. It also develops for us the characters of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Sherlock Holmes, for the first time in The Sign of Four, is seen to be taking cocaine, injecting himself at the beginning of the book because he is bored and hasn't got a case to think about. So Doyle was very keen to show the flaws in Sherlock Holmes's character. And as far as Dr. Watson was concerned, in this book we find that he has a romantic streak, quite the opposite to Sherlock Holmes, in fact. And by the end of The Sign of Four, Dr. Watson has indeed married the heroine. And so we are able to see very clearly in this book the differences between the men. When Dr. Watson tells Sherlock Holmes that he is in love with Mary Mostyn, Sherlock Holmes gives a dismal sigh. This sort of relationship between them, the banter and the friendship that develops over the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes stories, is one of the joys of reading it, because it is a really genuine, I think, friendship, and it develops through the short stories and through these novels. The other novel that I haven't yet talked about is The Hound of the Baskervilles, probably the most famous of all Sherlock Holmes stories. It is a book that Conan Doyle didn't really want to write. He wanted to write a novel, yes, but he didn't want to write a Sherlock Holmes novel. But he was having a golfing holiday with a friend of his in Cromer. The weather turned bad, and sitting in the hotel, making up stories to entertain each other, they stumbled on this legend, an East Anglian legend, of a hound that stalked through the countryside. Conan Doyle's friend was called Bertram Fletcher Robinson, and he lived in Devon, and they decided they'd continue this story and perhaps develop it in a joint novel. So Conan Doyle went to visit Robinson in Devon, and they went across Dartmoor, and gradually this story evolved more and more, including a local legend about a hound that existed on the moors at Dartmoor, and between them they developed the plot of The Hound of the Baskervilles. So there's always been some contention as to how much Conan Doyle wrote and how much Bertram Fletcher Robinson wrote. Conan Doyle initially dedicated the book to Robinson, though he did make the claim that he had written it all himself. Robinson, in later years, contradicted this to a certain extent. But anyway, the point is, the story is there, and it's a great story. And some people, including P.D. James, think it is the greatest detective story ever written. It's a story that involves death, mystery, suspense, legend, and as he was writing it, Conan Doyle began to think, well, I need somebody who can bring these elements together. I need perhaps a brilliant detective who can solve the problem. Well, of course, the detective was staring him in the face. He'd already created Sherlock Holmes, though at this stage he didn't really want to write any more Sherlock Holmes stories. But he couldn't avoid the obvious solution. So Doyle brought his creation into the novel, and The Hound of the Baskervilles became another Sherlock Holmes story. He'd already killed Sherlock Holmes off, you see, at the end of one of the collections of short stories in The Adventure of the Final Problem. Holmes had drowned in the falls at Reichenbach, and Doyle had no intention of resurrecting him. So this story, The Hound of the Baskervilles, is presented as an early case of Sherlock Holmes when he and Watson first began working together. And it's interesting, too, that Watson is given quite a prominent part in this story, The Hound of the Baskervilles. He does a lot of the detective work whilst Holmes is otherwise engaged. And I think that Doyle was eager to show that this creation of his, Sherlock Holmes, the great mind, the machine, the great deducer, couldn't work alone. He needed Watson as his partner, friend and ally. And I think, again, that is one of the joys of reading Sherlock Holmes, is this developing relationship and how both men, in a sense, were compatible. I think probably the short stories are more often read than the four novels, but in the novels we get a much greater sense of the character and interplay of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. The characters are developed more fully in these novels. In the short stories, the cases are very tight and succinct, and we learn little bits about the characters, but certainly in the novels, if you want to know more about Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, I would suggest you read those.